We are a deeply divided country, writes Cyril. Our divisions run along the fault lines of race, class, religion. Our political divisions are stark and well-defined and decidedly first world. And let's start there, Cyril Vedder. I don't think it's any secret, but what can we do to bridge the gap?
Well, first of all, Jim, I want to thank you for having me this morning. It's always enjoyable to come and visit with you. And in the interest of full disclosure and dispel any potential conflict of interest and whatnot, I also served as the interim GM at WRKF until November of last year. So,
and you're probably the reason why I'm here. So I appreciate that.
Good.
And you're still on the board.
I am.
So. But that's not why you're on the show. He was on the show many times before he was a board member. And I did mention also a Vietnam veteran and a Bronze Star winner. I truly don't know of anybody with a more varied background than you. And you've got a few years on you. I know that because you went to high school with one James Carville.
I did. And, you know, what you're saying is that I can't figure out what it is I want to do with my life, right? I mean, just to bounce around from one thing to another. But on the first world problem issue, you know, the Wall Street Journal did a piece today on the breakdown of civil discourse in the country. And really what I tried to do with that piece was to say that in kind of an evolutionary sense, where we've gone from concerns about survival, the things that we fight over, women's reproductive rights, gay rights, political correctness, Confederate monuments, restroom gender battles, all that stuff, you know, those things are not really issues of any survival consequence. I mean, just a cursory research, 40% of the world's population is without running water, 60% without sanitary toilets, 25% without electricity, 80% of humanity lives on less than $10 a day, 11% of the world's population is hungry, malnourished, and we're fighting over issues that really aren't survival issues. They're issues of our own creation. And not only are we fighting over these relatively inconsequential issues, at least from a survival or evolutionary point of view, we're fighting over them not in a way that says, okay, we'll respectfully agree to disagree. It's become demean or, you know, physically shout down a speaker.
Or attack.
Physically attack a person. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's one thing to have, you know, wide political disagreement. It's another thing to do it with respect and mutual respect and, you know, observe other person's dignity and not go overboard.
You say 80% of the planet lives on less than $10 a day. That's a sobering number.
It really is.
And we take much for granted.
We do take so much for granted. And, you know, the refugee crisis, for example, 60 million of our fellow human beings are displaced. And these folks are escaping war and poverty, religious extremism, corrupt and oppressive governments, barrel bombs, sarin gas. I mean, you know, just horrible things.
And we get lathered up over an election in which I would say many Republicans hated Hillary Clinton worse than real enemies of the U.S., like Vladimir Putin. And likewise, many Democrats hate the president, Donald Trump, more than they do Putin or other true enemies of the United States.
Yep.
And I like your advice that if you're an MSNBC news devotee, try watching Fox News or vice versa.
Right.
But most people don't. They
no.
want their... Yeah. ideas to be reinforced.
It's an echo chamber, yeah. And you just want confirmation bias, and that's why both of those channels are very successful. And you know, the ratings of cable news, whatever the political bent, are through the roof these days.
Yeah, I do find it amusing that for the most part, news channels have been rough on Donald Trump, and probably for good reason at times, but yet they're counting the money. He's been good for business.
Absolutely. And, you know, coming from the television business, I mean, one of the mottos of my company was we love commercials more than a hog loves slop. So,
well, that's what makes the trains roll.
Exactly.
You can't have good journalism in America without you got to feed the beast. You got to have those commercials. Mm-hmm. And then the question is, how much corporate influence is there? Do we sacrifice our integrity for the almighty dollar?
Well, with the way campaign finance is conducted these days, and there's so much PAC money and corporate money and idea-based campaign contributions, you know, it's tough. I mean, you know, when you run for public office, you have to pretty much have your hand out all the time, you know, asking for money, and money doesn't come without some, you know, thought of payback. You know, this is, I'm supporting you, and I hope you help me. And
but it seems to be getting worse rather than better. So how can we stop this from spinning out of control?
You're asking me?
Yeah. Like this Kathy Griffin the other day. Right. She posted something, and I don't think she had any idea about the reaction. And the reaction was appropriate.
Absolutely.
You can't advocate violence against the U.S. president, no matter whether you like him or not.
Exactly. And, you know, and the reaction was, as you say, it was appropriate. You know, she got just basically trashed her career with... whether she can overcome that or not is another question. But
I mentioned your varied interests, and you're a busy man, but somehow along the way you made time to have these interests, and that also includes an active workout life. You run participate in triathlons, and I think a lot of us don't have the proper balance in our lives. We reinforce our beliefs, and we go to work, spend a little time with our families, and that's it.
Well,
eat a lot of food.
Yeah. Speaking of which, one of the points I make in the First World Problems piece is that, you know, it's impossible to starve to death in the United States, right? I mean, you can eat yourself to death, but you can't starve to death. And while we have, you know, hunger and nutrition issues in various sectors of our society, you don't see the babies with distended stomachs and flies on their faces in Iowa or Ohio, and you're not going to see that. We're just not going to have that kind of survival threatening famine. So, you know, somehow we've got to find a balance there of being grateful for what we have, you know, having different points of view, but respecting the other person's point of view and not doing something over the top.
Well, the other day we noted the 100th birthday of President Kennedy, and whether you like him or not, he was born in 1917. He was born wealthy, but he lived through the Depression, lived through World War II, served in World War II heroically, and saw the country survive some big challenges, bigger challenges than anything we have experienced in our lives. And then we take three presidents born in the summer of 1946, Trump, Clinton, and Bush, none of whom served in Vietnam, and they've had a different perspective on life.
Well, one of the things that I take great comfort in is the fact that our institutions are strong. We have been a democracy for probably longer than any other country on the planet. And we've survived some terrible things, you know, Nixon, the Kennedy, the assassinations of the Kennedy brothers and Dr. King. And, you know, our institutions are strong. We'll survive whatever comes our way. I just wish we could survive it with a little more civility.
Cyril Vedder hopes that our country and our city and our state, that we have more civility. And it seems like we're having the same kinds of issues down at the Capitol that we're experiencing in Washington right now.
Right. You know, I was thinking this morning, as these events unfold, it reminds me of some of these Central Asian countries where you see their fights breaking out in the parliaments in Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan. We're becoming a stan, right? I mean, it's just... something that we really have to think about and really start addressing as a culture and as a society?
Well, we had a fracas at the Texas legislature a few days ago. Of course, this candidate in Montana beat up a reporter from The Guardian and then won going away the next day, Mr. Gianforte, now Congressman Gianforte. So we're a country that has a violent past. After all, at one time we did have the Vice President of the United States kill Alexander Hamilton. Aaron Burr never served a day in prison for that. So it's not like this is something totally beyond the pale, but at the same time, it's raw.
It's a little disturbing. Raw. Yeah, it is disturbing, and that's, you know, one of the reasons that I wrote the piece. I mean, for whatever my, you know, small voice is worth, I think it's something that we need to think about.
Well, we in Louisiana have long been at the bottom of a lot of lists, and that, it seems, continues no matter what happens. And it's somewhat disconcerting that we have so much friction right now at the Capitol. Not much is getting done.
Right. I used to say that we're always number one on the bad list and number 50 on the good list. And the reason that we end up that way is because we don't have a list-making company here. We need to come up with a list-making think tank so we can come up with some lists that we're number one in, some good things that we're number one in.
Well, when you were a college student, how many African-Americans were at LSU?
Not very many. No. Not very many.
So we have advanced.
Yes.
But yet we spent much of this session arguing about monuments.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, the Civil War is over. I mean, you know, just let's move on.
But it's hard for people to let go. I see where Representative Carmody, who had this bill in the legislature to essentially protect the monuments, he didn't make it this go around, but he says, I'll be back.
Right. Well, that's fine. You know,
that's part of the system.
But, exactly. Let's agree to disagree.
But we had great tension. Fortunately, though, no violence when Beauregard, all 14,000 pounds of him, was lifted from the ground in New Orleans. It was done so without bloodshed, so we can be thankful of that.
Right. You know, personally, I would have been in favor of a more nuanced way to do that, especially at the Lee statue, to put a plaque at the bottom saying that, you know, ultimately, Lee renounced the institution of slavery, but I understand that it does. Mitch Landrieu's speech has struck a chord. It was it's hard for an African American family to explain to their 8-year-old daughter that a Confederate general has such a prominent place in their city.
But we see that at the LSU campus with Kirby Smith Hall, David Boyd Hall, Raphael Sims Road, and the LSU Tigers, named after a Confederate fighting unit. So where do we draw the line? That's the question. And we have no street north of campus named after Lincoln, but we do the 15th president and the 17th president have streets, but no 16 for Lincoln. I wonder why. And your good friend, James Carville, wants the parade grounds to be named in honor of the founder of Louisiana State University, the Honorable William Tecumseh Sherman. Is that going anywhere?
I don't know. He sent me a picture that he had, a poster that he had made up of General Sherman with Go Tigers, G-A-U-X Tigers, under it. And so, yeah, he thinks that Sherman's contribution to LSU is worthy of memorializing, right?
And he has a sense of humor. I saw that he wrote that Sherman invented modern warfare.
Well, in the sense of absolute annihilation of the enemy, yeah, he did. Colin Powell was same approach. Don't do it unless you do it all in.
Mike in Baton Rouge writes, Cyril, Kathy Griffin was wrong and has apologized, but what about all the vile, disgusting things Ted Nugent said about President Obama, including hinting about assassinating him? Trump invited him to the White House, but cries about what Kathy Griffin did. Trump is a complete hypocrite. So it's a valid point that there are some voices on the right that are quite extreme, and they don't get punished the way Miss Griffin did.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of randomness in the way people respond to incidents like that. I'm not a big Ted Nugent fan either, no. Musically or politically. But.
And he is a conservative, and this guy Alex Jones, who has been a guest on this show, he says incredibly vile things, and yet the president, when he was campaigning, was a regular guest on his program. So,
right. So
I think we're all guilty of this to some extent. It's a matter of degree. And anybody who says something that is inciting violence should pay a price for it.
No doubt.
But there are those who say, then you're taking away their First Amendment rights. We're not taking away the right to say it.
Right.
But there is sometimes a price to those words.
Well, there's a classic law school example.
Yeah,
you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, right? I mean, you know, the First Amendment, I'm a First Amendment absolutist, but at some point you have to acknowledge that there are limits.
But I think the overall point that you're making, among many, is that all sides of the political spectrum, we all need to take a look at how we're conducting business.
Yeah, and just dial back this toxic partisan rhetoric. You know, it's not necessary. I mean, we can listen. You and I can have tremendous disagreements on any number of issues, but we don't yell and scream at each other about it. We just talk about it and say, okay, on that, we're going to agree to disagree.
I think Jerry Brown, the governor of California, has learned a lesson very late in his career. He's 79 years old now, and probably at the end of the trail, his term ends next year. But he does not respond to any criticism any longer. Like this Kevin McCarthy, who's the number two guy in the Republican hierarchy, regularly attacks him, and the governor of California doesn't take the bait. He criticized the president for negating the climate accord, but that's a policy issue. That's fair game.
Right.
But to make it personal,
yeah,
not so much.
No, not so much. And you know, the fact is that a place like California is, their climate change awareness and environmental regulations are so advanced and so forward thinking and future oriented, and you know, I don't think anything that the Trump administration does with regard to the Paris Climate Accord is going to affect California, and probably won't affect the majority of corporations and businesses who are committed to a clean environmental future.
Well, Cyril Vedder, it is always a pleasure to talk with you. And